Coming up next, the Astrology Hour on KFOX.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles and all of Southern California. I'm Farley Malaris, and you're listening to Astrological Metaphysical Radio, the phenomenon of the 80s.
And good afternoon, Southern California. A little bit of a tilt today on the Astrology Hour, a slant. It's a no-forecast Monday, so we will be accepting calls for our general question contest. The winner, of course, invited down to a private audience in the control room with Farley Malaris, which I feel should be special. But the change is we're going to start do a topic on Mondays, some Mondays also. So congratulations to those of you that tuned in expecting or not expecting a topic. So what we'll do is get a topic and go to the general questions after the topic. If there are no questions, I'll do a topic for a full hour, but Mondays are sure to be different on the Astrology Hour. So if you have a question that's not a personal forecast, but you have a question on karma, astrology, metaphysics, the universe, God, philosophy, the New Age, our Farley's television appearances, then you know what? I just thought I'd make this announcement. That's right. There will be no earthquake in May. The earthquake is off, and I decided that Nostradamus must have been on drugs. Because, and all you people that are planning on leaving town, have a nice vacation. Frankly, I think that you got to figure this way. 500-600 years ago, or however long it was, Nostradamus had to try without computers and without knowing where Uranus and Neptune and Pluto were. Of course, Uranus is the planet of earthquakes, right? Without knowing about these three planets and without having the ability to look at retrogrades 400-500 years in the future, no wonder his planetary predictions make no sense. I mean, come on, the way his prophecy reads, that aspect's been going on for a year now. I think that the Nostradamus quake, if you want to know the truth, happened in the San Francisco quake. Remember that San Francisco quake that destroyed San Francisco? Or something was going on there. I don't think that we're going to have a quake in L.A., and I'm going to talk about that tomorrow night on The Late Show, 11:30 p.m., Channel 11, Fox Channel 11 with John Mulrooney. So of all the 40 psychics that predicted a 10-point quake in L.A., and of all the people that are worried and scared that L.A. is going to fall in the ocean, I want you to know that the earthquake astrologer right here, Farley Malaris, who has had a pretty good record as far as predicting quakes, is calling this quake off. In fact, I think we're going to slide through April and May with hardly a rattle. Now, of course, if there is a quake, then I'll be a fool, okay? And I'll say, hey, I was wrong, and if anybody gets hurt or, God forbid, killed or something, then I'll feel bad for them. But I'll have to say this all along. You've always heard about earthquakes in Southern California first, right here in the Astrology Hour. And, you know, I'm a very intuitive man. In fact, when I make my earthquake predictions, I feel like my guide encourages me, and I'm getting a strong impulse from my guide today to tell you not to worry. Now, also, there may be an occasional earthquake watch late April, okay? Because maybe in April, when Mars is square Jupiter, all right? This is different. April 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th. There's much more of an astrological chance of a quake in April than in May, all right? And that's exactly what I'll be talking about. I don't think that the opposition between the Sun and Jupiter is enough, because Mars is usually involved in quakes, and Mars is getting kind of late there. It's not quite early enough. Besides, I think LA's already had their quakes this year that were experiencing aftershocks. A lot of the vibrations have let loose. And if there is a damaging quake, I don't think it'll be in Southern California. So maybe a lot of you will feel better for that or think I'm a lunatic or whatever, but at least I'm going to say what I feel. So tomorrow, please tune in tomorrow night, Channel 11, 11:30, Tuesday, if you're listening in April of 1988, Fox Channel 11, The Late Show with Farley Malaris. And you can still call Fox Television and get tickets. Tell them you want to be at that show and bring your astroscopes because I may choose a couple of people from the audience to do their charts. So call Fox Television and tell them you want tickets to The Late Show. Tuesday night, the show Farley's going to be on, and they'll connect you with The Late Show. All right, welcome to the Astrology Hour. Today's topic is called Directing a Happy Life. And along the road, along the lines of a reasons why a lot of people get involved in astrology, the reason is because a lot of people are very gestalt, and they suffer. It reminds me of the rat in the cage. Remember, if the rat does the wrong behavior, it gets a shock, you know, 20, 30, 40 volts or whatever. If it does the right behavior, it gets a cookie or, you know, something to eat. Well, life is very much like that, too. It seems like if karmically we don't do what we're supposed to do, then we get a shock or a jolt, sometimes a couple hundred volts. And if we do something real bad, of course, like kill someone, you get a real shock because you go to the electric chair, unless they've outlawed mandatory execution. But anyway, Still, I believe in the law of karma, and I do believe that if you tackle your karma and you absolve your karma without getting too obsessed, like the rat, by going towards what you know you shouldn't reach for, right, and then reaching for it, and then boom, you do get the shock, instead of not being obsessed or reaching for that, but doing the good behavior, the spiritual thing, and basically trying to just kick back and let life flow for you. I think one of the reasons why people are in so much pain, whether it's emotionally, mentally, spiritually, or even physically, because if you really screw up, then your body starts showing it, right? Because then your chakras get freaked out and your health changes. You can create ulcers and tumors and cancer, God forbid. So you want to manifest, of course, a power, positive aura of health. And when you feel little symptoms coming on, you want to make those drastic changes. I'm not a doctor, but I like to detox or give my body a break, maybe fast on juice for a day or meditate, pray, and stop some of those negative toxic patterns that we do. But anyway, when you get into astrology, you look at your chart, or you call me up, or you learn about astrology, and then you learn about your own personal karma gestalt, I call it, which means that you know where the well is, where you go, and it's either dry or it's poisonous. Like my well, for example, oftentimes is commitment. It seems like if I avoid the words commitment, or if I avoid the word relationship or marriage, then I'm a lot more happier rat. You know, I feel more rewarded and stuff. But if I try to make commitment work, it's like stuff like that starts going on. Or another thing would be career. If I get too obsessed, of course, in my career, if I want things too much, too fast, you got to be careful what you ask for, because sometimes you throw yourself into a big ring filled with politics, lots of authority figures, supervisors, people yelling and screaming and hitting you and firing you and rejecting you. So that's another one of those natural, normal karma gestalts we have. And then another one, of course, would be food. You know, you go eat dinner, you overeat, your stomach tells you, you're full, guy. You know, you've had enough. You've filled the sack already. Cool. But no, we just like to eat, 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 eat. That's another one where you have that karma gestalt. And then, of course, sometimes sex. You can catch VD or an infection or, God forbid, AIDS. So you got to be careful with sex, too. And also, I would say drugs, of course, and alcohol, definitely a karma gestalt. But see, you can identify different things in your chart. Like on Friday's show, we talked about the nomads are the ones in astrology, the karma gestalt people in relationships, the ones that really are not suited for relationships, and people that karmically are a lot happier as nomads, people that are more into their own lives and that can handle relationships on more of a comfortable arm's length, uncola, you know, type way, where we don't really define it. It's just like we're having fun, we go out, and things are cool. Well, there's all types of nomads in life. There's like a career nomad, somebody that doesn't get too obsessed with that. There's a spiritual nomad, a person that has somehow processed his need for drugs and alcohol and nicotine and caffeine and all these addictive behaviors. And we can identify in our charts these karma tendencies. For example, if we have squares and oppositions to Mercury, we have a communication karma gestalt, which means we either talk too much, we don't receive what's being said to us, or we make a big deal out of communication when sometimes it's not necessary to do that. It's better just to learn to listen. Then what if there's a square or an opposition to your planet Venus? A money gestalt, right? Where money is such a priority in your life that it overwhelms your need to be spiritual and loving and caring, so it can create ill will in your life, in your marriage, in your partnerships, and of course, all portions of your life if you're not careful. The money gestalt karma, of course, is something we reach for that we can make ourselves sick over and create a negative heart vibration that can give you a back problem or a heart problem or a stomach problem. So anyway, the Venus square in opposition shows us the karma gestalt with money and love, because we're always looking for something that's never there with love. In other words, we are expecting Gone with the Wind, right? On the beach. We're expecting something very, very dramatic to happen in our life. If it doesn't happen, boy, are we destroyed with that stuff. And then the Mars karma gestalt would be the life force burning out, pushing yourself too hard, sometimes making things in life more important than your own spirit, your own body, the temple to your soul, because exercise is such a big deal, right? Run 5 miles a day, play racquetball, jog, don't eat enough, then you destroy all your vital organs. Even though you look great on the outside, your inside is very ugly. So you can karma gestalt yourself with your Mars affliction, squares and oppositions, obsessions to look good, obsessions with appearance, our obsessions with burning out and pushing yourself. And then there's the Jupiter opposition or square on your natal chart, and that's totally overindulgence and whatever. It's like going too far, too fast, too quick. Major impatience. And then you have the square or opposite. Why am I laughing? My Jupiter's fine. That's why I'm never impatient. Anyway, wait a minute. That's right. I am always patient. Thank you. That's a good mantra. Then there's the square in opposition to your Saturn, which means that you are one that likes to keep going back and sticking your hand in the fan over and over. It's like there is a fire there, and you keep sticking it in over and over and over. So the square to the Saturn, or the opposition to the Saturn, is called a karma, a double karma gestalt, because you really can't read between the lines at all. Even though you're being shown what is wrong, what the problem is, you keep doing it. And then there's more, of course. There's Uranus, and there's Neptune, and there's Pluto. The Uranus karma gestalt would be a problem with friends, hanging out with the wrong kinds, getting involved with people that might cause problems with your life, accidents in cars with friends, also having a problem with goals and directions because maybe you misled or manipulated or charmed other people's goals and directions in past lives from Uranus. Neptune's karma gestalt would be total disillusion and escapism, and Pluto's karma gestalt would be dominance, arrogance, eccentricity, manipulation, and sexual problems. So, now that we've analyzed our charts and found out all this karma gestalt stuff or where we tend to get burned, what can we do about it? Well, that's what today's topic is all about, because today's topic is called Directing a Happier Life, and this is a metaphysically based topic, which means that no matter what your chart is, no matter where your planets are, and no matter what kind of stress are affecting your planets, once you recognize your karma, and frankly, if you're so dumb that you don't know what your karma is, then check the pain in your life. Because karma, basically, in my opinion, can be identified by those areas and those vibrations and those choices you make where you walk away or you're involved in a place where you have a bad feeling. Reminds me of Star Wars with Harrison Ford, when I think they got thrown into the big mess of cosmic garbage disposal, and he said, I've got a bad feeling about this. Well, obviously he has a karma with garbage disposal. But the thing is that if you ever do say that to yourself, whether it's involved in a career or whether it's involved in a relationship or with a child, when you do have bad feelings about it, then obviously you are pushing too hard and you are trying to make things work your way too much. And obviously sometimes no matter what you do, it just doesn't work. People say, well, what do you do if you are a mother and you have a kid and you don't get along with the kid and you know the kid is your karmic gestalt? What do you do? Well, obviously, stop trying to be a mother so much. And let's take another angle. Let's try and be just a friend. Let's start basic here and stop expecting so much like our own mothers did, because that's a lot of reasons why we do things like that. You can't get rid of the kid, but you can change the way you raise him, maybe alter his behavior in so doing, and get therapy for yourself and the kid in case there's a karma there. Fifth house planets, squares and oppositions to the sun, and also squares and oppositions to the fifth house lord would be a karma gestalt with children and family. Okay, and you know, so another thing would be, hey, maybe there's somebody else the kid likes better in your family that can help raise him, like a sister or a brother or your mother and father. Fine. So give them more time with the kid. The kid may respect you later because you allowed him to follow courses of least resistance where there wasn't a lot of fighting and yelling and screaming and hitting between you and the kid. So I like to recognize the karma gestalt and then identify the karma and then process it. You know, a lot of people get involved in these karmic relationships that are horrible for them. How many times do you have to call someone up or spend time with them to find out that it's not right, it's not good, it's not going to work? Well, that's what having to be your own director is. Metaphysically speaking, this universe, this dimension that we live in, is an extremely sophisticated cosmic hologram. And we are terminals of God, which means our choices, our ideas, our attitudes, our actions, and our words all create our life. So whenever you speak or write in the now, and oftentimes I like to take my computer or a piece of paper and a pencil and manifest exactly in my life which I know will be good for me. And if it's not good, then I'll manifest something else. But part of this topic of directing a happier life has to do with the individual taking responsibility for their lives, and once they do have responsibility for their lives, if they don't like the situations they're in, if they are painful, if they find they are being too obsessed or selfish with things that aren't right for them, or vice versa, people around them are the same, then they need to start writing affirmations that will help correct this karma gestalt. If you're in a bad relationship and you want to be free, then directing the affirmation to change that would be like, I am happy and free unto myself. I am an independent person, and I don't need a commitment to be happy. Okay? And you reverse that. If you think you need a commitment, and a lot of times just saying the words, I want a commitment or bring my soulmate in, are not enough. Because what you want to add is, I want a balanced, happy, stable commitment. Add a few adjectives and adverbs here and help change this to the better. And just because you manifest something doesn't mean it's always going to manifest exactly the way you phrase it. Because your fears and your fantasies and your phobias can also become manifest because they're in your mind. Because your brain is also a God machine. See? So not only what you say manifest or what you write or see or believe manifest, but also what you think can manifest. That's why meditation and behavioral modification to take yourself off of negative thought patterns, in my opinion, is very important. But a lot of people are in such negative thought pattern processes that they not only remain in the gutter of their lives, but they keep manifesting it. I take an example of this one lady who has a horrible relationship with a total drunk and drug addict, and she can't get him out of the house no matter what, because deep inside of her mind, she doesn't want to get him out of the house. Even though everyone around her says this guy's no good for you and she's miserable because of it, she won't let go spiritually and emotionally. So that's why he's still in the house. Even though she bet me $100 the other day that come hell or high water, he was going to be out of the house. You know what? I won the bet because he's still not out of the house. That's what happens. It's our own limitations and fear and negativity and minute phobias that prevent us from having the total happiness we need. And what? That's why you have to review what you want in life and process out those fears and phobias and then learn to take the course of least resistance. Learn what dharmic effects reward you when the rat gets the biscuit, right? You know what happens to me that's fun? Taking care of my birds gives me dharma. Treating my friends, being generous with my friends and relatives gives me a dharmic effect. Being spiritual and being compassionate and caring and crying whenever I see people suffering, that gives me dharma. Doing something for another person, reaching out, teaching them. I could write a whole list of 1,000 things called what makes Farley's life dharmic. And then I could write a whole list of what makes Farley's life karmic. Well, of course, if I get the relationships, the sex is there. And if I work for somebody in career, the money is there. And if I go ahead and create a whole bunch of friends that are drug addicts, I'll have some companionship. But look at all the pain involved in dealing with the sex and intimacy and the commitment and dealing with working for people that are jerks and dealing with a bunch of drugs and drug addicts. When I can play with my birds and do things and teach other people and be spiritual and meditate and be free and play my little computer games, which takes my mind off of all the negative crap. When people put me down and say, why do you spend so much time at the computer? You know, so they're going, hey, this is my way of processing karma from a past life. I was a great warrior general more than once. Okay, now we are going to be going to the phones here soon. And we have a winner in the studio here, a beautiful Leo woman who won our general question contest. You did win, didn't you? Yeah, your mic. You want to say something in the mic?
No.
Okay. You don't have to. Now, also, I think major part of this topic, really, obviously, is getting into astrology. Because by getting into astrology, by identifying your karma gestalts from knowing what your squares and oppositions are, right? Then once you understand where you get burned and where the voltage is, then maybe you can process that stuff out. You learn more about your trines and sextiles where the dharmic effects are, and then in that way, you can also go to the well and have more fun in your life, see? But the key here is getting your astrology chart done. It's funny, I've never seen a shy Leo before. Now you know how hard it is to be on a mic, don't you? To try to avoid belly laughing. Yeah, you can do anything you want in the background because it's Mercury in your natal chart, Mercury retrograde. Okay. I almost turned your mic on again, so watch out. She doesn't feel nervous if it's not on. And don't forget, tomorrow night, The Late Show, Channel 11, Fox Television, 11:30. I'll be on The Late Show with John Mulrooney live, and you want to watch that. It should be a lot of fun. One final comment about this topic, directing a happy life. So number one, you got to be careful what you asked for, because sometimes what you asked for may be your karma. You know, one problem with being human and being selfish and being obsessed is that we think that we're smart when we're asked for something we know is karmic. Obviously, if we're nomads, the one thing we don't want to ask for is a happy, stable, soulmate, committed relationship. Obviously, if we work out enough karma, in my opinion, I think you will back into a relationship. If you are not done with your karma, there's no way you're just going to lift that nomadic tendency off your shoulders overnight and say, well, I'm not going to be a nomad anymore, even though I have Venus and Aquarius, square Mars and Taurus, you know. Just doesn't happen, you know. So you have to be patient with that and absolve your karma, and maybe you're not right for commitment in that instance. Also, another thing is, what I like to do is sit down at a desk or at a table, whatever, in the park, and write down a bunch of things I want to happen in my life, like I was directing the movie Farley Malarist the Comedy, without making it too hardcore and too violent. You know, you want to make this to be a happy romantic comedy. What I like to do is visualize and manifest some cute, happy, not intense characters that are having fun, laughing people, you know, birds being born and swimming around the house. No, actually, hopefully not swimming. Singing around the house, flying around the house, and and my friends having a good time, playing games, going to movies, going on cruises, traveling, being happy. Think of all that dharmic things, teaching people, sitting down with people face to face, eye to eye, counseling them, talking to them, giving them advice, learning from them, vice versa. And you got to follow your dharma. So you want to manifest and direct things that you know are going to make things happen to you. And there's a lot of people out there going, well, Farley, I want career and relationships. So they're going to sit there and manifest another dog career and another dog relationship and say, what? Directing your life doesn't work. You know, if that's what your karma is, then that's your gestalt. So you want to try different avenues. Why not manifest a rose garden or a silent, silky river in a moonlight? Why not manifest a walk on the beach and a couple of friendly people? I want to manifest marathon sex with the first girl. I mean, come on. You know, like, this is your karmic gestalt. This is where you end up getting into trouble. So what you try to do is be mellow and gentle with yourself. You are God, and you do have this powerful creative machine, and whatever you believe to be so will happen. So that's why you got to watch what you think, you got to watch what you say, you got to watch what you write down, and you got to watch what you visualize, because it will become manifest. And this topic is dedicated to all the people out there that have directed a mess and that are in a mess and that are creating an ugly picture. Hopefully you can turn it around. Let's go to the phones now and start our general question contest. Ray should be ready. How are you, Ray?
You betcha.
Thank you for calling.
No problem. A question I have is not really on the topic.
That's fun. No problem. Did you like the fact we did a topic today, too?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
It helps.
I was inspired.
A little bit of information helps.
Sorry you're long-distance, guy.
No problem.
Okay.
Void of course moons. Got involved with a woman who has a void of course moon. And she,
you mean she has a void course moon in her natal chart?
Yeah.
Whoa.
And she seems to be somewhat neurotic. How does this affect?
How did you find out she had a void course moon in her natal chart? Was there a book you looked up to see if the moon was void course, or did you just notice it was unaspected?
Well, I went through, I used Debbie's book.
Mm-hmm.
And it listed between Pisces and Aries.
Debbie's a nice lady to do that. Okay, so what's your question?
In general, how does void of course really affect a natal chart? You probably covered it on another show, but I don't remember.
In my opinion, the void course moon in a natal chart basically may create some kind of emotional gestalt with a person where they may need more identification or specification as far as trying to understand or figure out emotions, especially in love relationships. Is she like that?
Yes.
Does she have an ultra need to communicate and analyze and spell things out emotionally?
Yeah, she's currently just finishing up her MFCC certificate, too. She's gotten into counseling now.
Oh, good. That's great for her. But these are emotional detectives, a lot of them, and that's why some people like void course. I think two void course moons will go together well.
Okay, well.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye-bye. Ray, obviously, is not a void course moon. Let's go to Ava now. Hi.
Hi, Farley. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for being there.
Okay.
I'd like to ask you a question regarding what in your chart would tell you what your purpose in this life is for, and how do you work that out? How do you develop that? What your purpose in this life is here to be? Where do you find that in your chart?
I like to look at the North Node to figure out purpose. It's like, it's funny, but the North Pole of the Moon points through a certain sign, depending when you're born. Like, I give out the North and South Node every day in the news.
Uh-huh.
Well, the North Node is identified on your natal chart as an N-O.
Right.
And North Node basically means direction of the soul. Because the South Node of the Moon usually shows us our area of suffering and karma and things we've been through already.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is the soul interprets the North and South Node. The South Node is like the comet's tail, and the North Node is like the comet's head or the dragon's head or the direction or purpose of the soul. So usually by identification of North Node in sign and house, we get down purpose in life. For example, my North Node in Taurus in the 8th house, which Jupiter is conjunct at right now, all this next week or two, my purpose in life is a mission of balance. It is all those things that epitomize Taurus and Libra, because Libra is the vibration of the 7th house. And it's funny that my chart ruler being Libra rising is Venus, and Venus rules both Taurus and Libra. So my mission, obviously, is a mission of authentic love, authentic balance, authentic relating to people, and all those things which are Libran, such as balance, commitment, partnerships. And don't worry, it's a truck. That's a truck outside. Sometimes the control room shakes and Angie got scared. You're safe with me, Angie. Don't worry. They're doing construction outside, and sometimes they drop these walls in the whole building. Okay, does that help you any?
Yeah. So,
where's your North Node?
Aries, 14 degrees.
What house?
I think it's the 4th house.
Okay, so your purpose in life would be the epitomization of the vibrations from Aries and the fourth house vibration, which is Cancer. So it has a lot to do with self and self-security. Okay?
Mm.
You can spend a lot of times analyzing Aries and Cancer and putting it together to understand your North Node.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you very much.
God bless you.
Have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye. Have a wonderful, beautiful day. Today's show, the topic was on directing a happy life. Hi, Alexis.
Hi.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. I kind of have a two-part question. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, first of all, I had my chart done by you like 4 years ago, and when I got it done recently, it was done on equal houses, and it switched a couple of planets in different houses.
Well, you see, back when we first came on the air, we didn't have the technology for equal house yet, so we did it in the closest thing, which was Placidus houses. And then when you got it redone, you got it back in equal house. Now, I believe that both Placidus and equal house work, even though I favor equal house. So I would question to you whether you felt the planets and houses paragraphs in your astroscope made more sense.
I haven't had a chance to look at it that much in depth.
Yeah, you might want to compare the two different paragraphs and see which one relates more to you. See, equal house reads me like a book. When I go into other house systems, I lose my second house Jupiter. I love my second house Jupiter, you know.
I've got.
What?
What I have.
All right.
I also wanted to know, how can I look at the karma in my chart and in other people's charts and see what type of, you know, which relationships are karmic and...
Okay, what you do is you go through your astroscope and you find any paragraph that's headed by planetary aspects that use either the word square or opposition.
Okay.
And then circle that heading and then go over to the negative. There's a plus and a minus. And then yellow highlight the negative and you'll know what your karma gestalt is for that aspect.
How can I see how other people relate to me karmically?
Karma is within the self. You are the center of your own karmic circle. Everyone serves as a catalyst for your own growth. No one is your karma. You are your own karma. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye. Let's go to Anne on line 6. Hello, Anne.
Hi there.
Welcome.
This is the third A. And when Alexis, Anthony, and Anne.
That's right. We're going berserk here with the A's.
Anyway, I'm very new with this stuff, and you'll have to forgive my ignorance here, but this is something that I've always sort of wondered about astrology. Why wouldn't this have to do with when you were born, the time you were born, the hour you were born, the day, and all that sort of thing? Why wouldn't it be when you were conceived?
There is a chart for when you're conceived.
There is.
Yeah, no one knows when it started, though. I mean, it's real difficult, unless the woman, a light bulb or one of these imperial margarine crowns appears above the head when conception occurs. Not too many women know exactly. See, like, if a woman could sense her own fertilization, then she could write down the date, time, and city of birth, and we could do a chart for the pregnancy.
Uh-huh.
See, that's when you can tell things like problems, what kind of baby you might have, gender of the baby, miscarriages, abortions, all that stuff is shown in the chart of the pregnancy. But you see, the final separation occurs. See, like, the baby still has that oneness vibration when it's in the womb.
Right.
And when it finally is born and the umbilical cord is cut and it is forced to exist on its own, then the illusion of separation ceases. And then yet another chart, of course, a chart of the life cycle in this life. See, there's two separate lives.
Right.
There's a life of the baby in the womb, and then it stops being dependent on the mother, and its own body functions start. Like it starts going to the bathroom, it starts breathing, it can see, you know, all these emotions start triggering. So when the vehicle starts running, there's a new chart at birth. Okay?
Oh, that's really interesting. Can I ask you one other quick question?
Sure.
Okay. Is there any relation to biorhythms and astrology? In terms of biorhythms are also cycles and are also seem to have something to do with that, if there would be any sort of relationship between the two.
Well, I believe in biorhythms and I follow my own. I haven't been able to find any real correlation, although when you're having a critical day in your biorhythms, sometimes you could be having a tough transit, too, at the same time.
Right, and it would match up.
Yes. I'm sure there are some astrologers that have run some tests on it that could confirm it worked.
Uh-huh.
I did notice that one of the most traumatic points in my life, I think when I got shot in the eye with a BB ricochet,
well, that sounds
I was having a heavy transit and a double critical or triple critical biorhythm day, too.
Should have stayed in bed.
Exactly. I shouldn't have not have bought the BB gun and went around shooting things.
All right, great. Well, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Ooh, my eye hurts from that. A little vibration there. Let's go to Mary on line number 4. Hello, Mary.
Hi. I have a question concerning areas of karma in the chart, wherein, you know, you can see problematic areas by squares and oppositions, but what also if there's real positive aspects to that area? Is this something you should still avoid, or is it something that's going to pull you in even further towards this part of the chart?
Well, a lot of times if you have trines and sextiles to one planet and then squares and oppositions at the same time, you're given like a buffer. Where unlike most people that have totally afflicted zones, which, you know, is really the big electric shock, it's like an agony ecstasy type treatment, where maybe you can be married, but it is extremely challenging, and it's definitely the good times, bad times from Led Zeppelin, if you know what I mean.
Is it too simple to say if there's more squares and oppositions than trines, or should you look at how exact the aspects are? Or, you know, because, I mean...
The more exact the aspect, the more intense the karma. Yep. The more squares and oppositions, the more intense the karma. Trines and sextiles, in a way, then can only be a tease. Because squares and oppositions are called hard aspects, and most astrologers agree that people will feel that these harder aspects, squares and oppositions, a lot more powerful than they will trines and sextiles. Unless you have a power of the mind like Farley Malaris does, and I place so much importance on trines and sextiles, that's why I feel them so much more.
Yeah, well, I try to play that way, too. All right, well, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, let's go over here to Randy on line 5. Hi, Randy.
How you doing?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Yeah, so I got a kind of like a question or opinion. You talk about all these karmics and stuff, and you believe in reincarnation and things like that, right?
Well, now, I didn't say that. What I do in my life is I don't know what the truth is. Like, I'm telling you, Randy, there's a possibility that when you're dead, you're dead.
Uh-huh.
And your energy will just go into the void of the universe. And the existentialists believe that there is nothing.
Well, I think...
And wait a second. What happens is I don't know what's going on, but in my life, I care to research and analyze the situation. And that way, in case there is something after death, I'll be prepared. Reincarnation just happens to be one of the philosophies I care to study because I'm interested in it, but I can't for sure guarantee it works. Although I do have specific feelings of past lives, and I do feel I've regressed myself, these also may be fantasies too.
I just want to know your opinion. A lot of people do believe in reincarnation, and I think that, you know, I'm beginning to believe it too. They say you have to go through different lives and stuff. When you talk about all these zodiac things that happen and occur in each person's individual zodiac, I think that everybody has to go through all the zodiac signs before they become what they're supposed to be or where they're supposed to go. They have to experience every one of them.
Sound like you're an astrologer from a past life, Randy.
No.
Yeah, I definitely believe that there is a step-by-step process, just like we have kindergarten, elementary school, high school, and college. I do believe that's the way the growth of life works and that the zodiac is involved in that. And Pisces, of course, is graduation. All right, Guy, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can squeak in our last caller, Richard.
Farley, what effect do stelliums have on the natal chart?
When you have a stellium, there's a planetary combination of energy. A stellium means there's a grouping of three or more planets that are within 8 degrees or 16 degrees orb of each other. And usually planets, they work off of each other, like a Sun-Pluto Mercury conjunction would be a combination of what those planets rule, Leo being the Sun, Mercury being Gemini and Virgo, and Pluto being Scorpio. So a person with a Sun-Pluto-Mercury conjunction would have a combination of a Scorpio, Gemini, also Virgo, Leo vibration. See what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So they're very complicated analytical energy vibrations that help us understand the uniqueness of our own design nature as we designed before birth. Okay?
Okay.
Bye-bye. We'll see you real soon, weekdays on KFOX 93.5 FM at 12 noon. Thanks for coming, Angie, and have a nice day. Bye.